Is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to the essentials. This is your host, Hubert Edwards, and we're going to have ourselves a good conversation again, as we usually do. So what is it that you are focusing on today? I know that there's been quite a bit of rain, much needed, but there's been some interesting development over the last while. And I had this question, which I kind of formulated with the intention to have the show last week, not remembering that given the holidays, there was not going to be a live show. But I had this question about how we look to the future and the questions that we need to ask about the future of the country. And so this evening, I have a number of questions, don't always have the answers. If you listen to me, you know, I like to ask questions and then we provide an opportunity for discussion. So you want to give us a call at 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Once again, 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. The text line is 422-4796. And as I was getting ready to come into the studio to, you know, preparing, flipping through Facebook, I saw someone with a post, a lady, I think her name is Potier. And she had a post and there's a photograph up there with a school being awarded for something. So I took a read. Turns out that SAC, St. Augustine College, won a debate competition. And the moot, as it turns out, really aligned very closely to what I wanted to discuss. And so I wrote it down. And it reads, "Be it resolved that the Bahamas has the wherewithal to provide comfortably for its citizens." Say that again. "Be it resolved that the Bahamas have the wherewithal to provide comfortably for its citizens." So I looked at that and I'm saying, okay, who is proposing and who is opposing this particular moot? Turns out that Aquinas was the opposition and they were for the statement and SAC was against it. Turns out that SAC won. And, you know, in my mind, looking at the moot itself, I kind of asked a question, was it really fair? Was this fair for the team which was proposing as opposed to the opposing team? Because there are a couple of things in it which jumps out at me very, very quickly. It says that the Bahamas has the wherewithal, the country have the wherewithal to provide comfortably for its citizens. Is this true? Is this a fact? So that's one question. On another level, is it the obligation, the responsibility of the country to provide comfortably for its citizens, or to facilitate an environment in which the citizens can comfortably provide for themselves? It's an important question. Is it for the country to provide comfortably for its citizens, or is it for the country to create the environment in which the citizenry can comfortably provide for itself? So those are two other questions which jump out at me just reading this. Another thing which I conjure up just looking at it is it used the word citizen, which is, in fact, a narrower definition. At any point in time, it's a narrower definition, be it very large, likely very large and significant, but it's always a narrower definition of who might be in the country at any point in time than if you were to say residents. So citizens and residents meaning everyone who lives there, but citizens meaning only those who are citizens of the Bahamas. So is it that the government should provide comfortably for the citizens, but it would not do so for other residents, persons who fall under other categorization? And is it truly, let's use the government as a proxy for the country, is it truly the role of the government to provide for us, to provide for you, to provide for me? Is that the obligation? But I look at it and I think it was a very intriguing mood. I would have loved to have listened to this debate. I didn't have that opportunity. I just saw it, didn't know about it, obviously. But must have been a brilliant debate between those two schools. Because the topic is absolutely, absolutely intriguing. Now, you know, different persons, sometimes you win or you lose based on your preparation and how you say it. I am looking at this immediately and I would be thinking, well, if you ask me to defend this, I am in trouble. Because I don't think I could honestly defend it. Of course, if it's a competition, you would be obliged to do so. But it's so much easier to oppose in my mind than to defend. Because there's so many aspects of this which I don't believe. Really, so many aspects of our lives which really, in my mind, it's not the government responsibility to provide. Not the government responsibility to provide, underline the word provide, but rather to facilitate our ability to be able to provide those things. So there are some things which government obviously have to do. They have to build schools. We don't go around building schools. But really, it's a facilitation of an educational opportunity. And then we have to go out and make sure that we do well and do the school thing and get to where we want to get. And they have to provide roads and stuff, yes, but it's also still facilitated because the government is not going to necessarily come and provide you with a car to move from point A to point B. You have to find means of your transportation. Even if it facilitates the public transportation system, you still have to go work and pay for the trip from one point to the next. So I would prefer the word facilitate as opposed to provide, but be that as it may, want to send out congratulations to St. Augustine College. Obviously, they did a very splendid job in the eyes of the judges and all who were there, and so they came out victorious in this. But it struck me as something very intriguing because it was so close to what I kind of wanted to touch on, which is this: the future Bahamas. the future Bahamas. Recently, The Guardian Radio celebrated 10 years. We didn't get to participate, didn't get any of the cake. The station manager need to bear that in mind, didn't get any of the wine and stuff. But it was a really good feeling to be a part of a new thing. I wasn't here when it just started, but I came on reasonably well. I think I'm now being associated with The Guardian Radio maybe 7 years or so. So been around a while. And so it's a proud moment to be part of something which is celebrating 10 years, always a good milestone. And so as I was preparing for the show for last week, which would have been in the week of the celebration, I started to ask myself some questions. What does the future look like? What does the future look like for me personally, for you personally, and for the country? For your community, for whatsoever it is that you are involved in. But we want to keep it as wide as possible, the future Bahamas. What does the future look like to you? Next year, the Bahamas will celebrate 50 years of independence, 50 years of self-determination, much more years of internal self-rule. But this 50-year milestone means something or ought to mean something of significance. Oftentimes, it is said, you can't really, you know, assess life looking forward, but you can connect the dots looking back. So when we look back to 1973, what type of dots are we seeing? And then when we glance forward to what may be another 50 years, what is it that we are anticipating? What in your mind does that future look like? What kind of country do you see? The Bahamas, hyper capita country, relatively affluent compared to many others within the region. But is it still going to be an emerging economy? In the next 50 years, is the Bahamas going to be developed? Many of us are not going to be here. I won't be here. But where will the country be on its growth continuum? And how will we get there? When we take a look at the past, and often we do this, we talk about the past. We talk about the past with great nostalgia, the romance of the days gone by. Those were the good old days. And we talk about them because they mean something to us. We are emotionally connected to those moments. Some we experience on a personal level. Others we experience through the lives and the stories of individuals who are close to us, or we experience them through reading or television or whatsoever means. But they become a tangible, important part of how we shape and see the current time that we are in. And so we talk about those a lot. And very often we argue about the present. We argue about everything. We argue about government appointments. We argue about who getting the job. We argue about whether the price is going up or things are going down. We argue about who is going to win the NBA, who is going to win the NFL. We argue about many, many things. But we don't spend as much time between our looking back and talking about the past and our arguments of the current. And, you know, the arguments are not all bad. Sometimes we talk about good things. Yeah, lots of time. But when we compare those two, as opposed to when we are seeking to speak of or about the future, the latter becomes very, very minuscule. We don't spend a lot of time talking about the future, at least not all of us. Some persons do. In some arena, more so than others. But what it is that we should do? What is it that we should be dreaming about for the Bahamas, dreaming about for the country, dreaming about for the young people, for the institutions, for the organizations? What is it that we should be planning for? From an economic point of view, for example, are we really serious about getting to, say, maybe $20, $25 billion in GDP? And how will we get there? Yesterday was, in my mind, a very important day when the Prime Minister announced the policy framework for digital assets. I think that holds some important implications for the future for a number of reasons. Not just that the Bahamas wants to be a leader in the region and a leader in the world, not just because the Bahamas stepped out there before many others and has the DARE Act, Digital Asset and Registered Exchange, that's what DARE stands for, and not because of the things that we have done attracting the likes of FTX, which is a digital crypto exchange or digital asset exchange, however you want to look at it. Not because of those, but because we should recognize that we are entering an environment, a new era, where it is becoming evident, to me at least, it's very evident to me, and I'm sorry I missed out on the way earlier thing and should have had like 300,000 bitcoins. But it's becoming very evident that cryptocurrency, digital currency, is going to be the new way. In many ways, right now it is, but the adoption is going to increase. The use of the technology, the blockchain, and the distributed ledger and all of that sort of, you know, terms which they have out there, and a lot of them I do not know, distributed financing, DeFi, all of that sort of thing is going to be very, very important going forward. And so recognizing that our relevance of, say, for example, our financial services industry is going to change in the not too distant future. It's certainly a big thing, I think, a huge and important thing for that policy framework to have been put out. So in a way, this is an example of how the future is being thought about. Where are we going to be in this new great paradigm of digital asset and cryptocurrency? Well, a framework is there. But that's only a part of what the future holds. So what is it that you expect to see in the future? How do you expect to see the country shape up? How do you expect to see governments operate, the interaction between government and the citizenry? How do you expect to be able to move through life from a financial perspective? The ability to acquire land, the ability to acquire wealth, the ability to become an entrepreneur, the ability to secure education. What are the things which may trouble your mind at this point in time? Or maybe these things don't bother you. Maybe you have it all made. You have enough money. You have enough situations around you and circumstance which are favorable that you don't need to occupy yourself with these things. Or you're in a position which is very, very important, influential, but you kind of focus on you and yours more so than the wider picture. So you're not occupying your time with these thinking. You're not thinking too far down the road beyond maybe where your journey may likely end. So all I'm doing here today is putting forward these questions with a view of, you know, tickling your mind, pricking your sensibilities to see whether or not there is some thought, you have given some thought to this type of a future. And I would love to hear from you. Again, you can call 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. They don't have to be, there's not a question of being wrong or right. This is your position, the way you see it, the expectations that you have, the ideals that you would love to see, or at least be convinced that they're going to happen, because you may not be around, but based on the things which are done today and some things which will happen in the near future, we can be convinced that maybe likely they will materialize. And then when we look at our trajectory to tomorrow, so here it is that we're kind of building a path to the future. So we're first asking the question, what does that tomorrow look like? Where the Bahamas is in the top percentile in education, in the top percentile in per capita income, not just within the region or in the Americas, but maybe in the world. In the top percentile in terms of national productivity. In the top percentile of, you know, manufacturing or light manufacturing or a leader based on, again, yesterday's announcement, a leader in the green energy space, the sustainable development space, in the top percentile. What would that look like? And what type of a clout would that bring to the Bahamas? Right here in the Caribbean, a small, well, not a small, if you take all of the land mass and squeeze it together, but an archipelago nonetheless with a small population, doing these things, having best-in-class energy production, energy generation, energy distribution, smart grids, best-in-class. How would that type of a country, that type of a Bahamas, be for those who are in it? As I read earlier, the moot from the debate between Aquinas and Sack, which says, be it resolved that the Bahamas has the wherewithal to provide comfortably for all its citizens. Imagine, even though I said very early, right up front, that the word provide may be something I would not be comfortable with, but facilitate. Imagine how comfortable we would be with that type of a facilitation, where the summer months don't bring on anxiety and trepidation because, you know, we are using green energy. We know that we have extra capacity. If a system goes down, the downtime is going to be minimal and we are all good to go. The education system, while the current one turns out excellent students, but those would not be in the minority. They would just be ordinary, just one of the boys or one of the girls, because we have a system which is so well developed. And when you look across the output of education, whether it's going to be on the academic side or the technical side, the Bahamas sits in the top percentile of that. You have the ability to kind of dream around this. Can we dream about the ability of the agricultural sector within the country, led in the first instance by some government policy and government direction and government strategy, but picked up by various associations and farmers and entrepreneurs and individuals with direct and personal interest in the sector, which becomes not necessarily the same type of a traditional type of a agricultural output that we see whether here or in other places, but agricultural output nonetheless, which has been studied, developed, and is well suited for the different climatic conditions of the various islands. And we leverage that. We leverage the difference in climatic region. Because as I understand it, I can't prove this to you, but I had a conversation with someone who says, you know, Inagua climatic conditions is, even though we are right here in the same Bahamas, is significantly different from Andros, for example. Exuma has some significant variation between that and, say, Eleuthera. So how can we get to the place where we're starting to dream of a future which take these nuances, these differences into consideration and create a unique, that is unique to the Bahamas for the most part, different from what you would experience across the region. But at the end of the day, create an output which is so fundamentally well thought out, strategic and sound that it propels the country to a different level of development, a different level of earning, export earning, a different level in terms of the standard of living, a different level from a perspective of food security, to a different level where tourism becomes tourism over there, but agriculture takes so much more from it as a source of purchase, as a marketplace for tourism, such that the domestication of inflows into one industry moves far and wide and trickles out to the common man in a more significant way, which makes his life and the common person life that more significant from a financial growth development perspective. So when we look at the trajectory of tomorrow, our trajectory of tomorrow, what do you see? Sorry, trajectory to tomorrow, what do you see? Do you see any of those things in play? And by trajectory, I'm saying based on the path that we are. So, you know, if you had a bow and arrow and you hold it at a particular angle, you pull it back, it will get to a particular place. You change the angle, it will get to a particular place. Depending on the trajectory, leaving the bow, it determines where it might land, plus or minus, depending on some interference, atmospheric interference. But is the current day trajectory, our trajectory to tomorrow, is it pointed in those type of a direction where the Bahamas is going to be significantly better, where we're going to see greater expansion from an economic perspective, deeper development from a human development perspective, greater output from a national productivity perspective, greater efficiency and greater facilitativeness from a government, private sector, public sector perspective. And then from a private sector, an environment in which it is significantly more able to be innovative and flexible and nimble, therefore driving our levels of opportunity for growth and export and supporting internal markets and having leftovers for supporting external market and so on and so forth. Is that trajectory there at this point in time? And are we having the conversations? Are we having the contemplations? Are we having the planning in place, which takes that into consideration in a broad-based way? As I mentioned to you, the policy position put out yesterday, haven't read it totally, but glanced through it and read through the Prime Minister's message or the Prime Minister's presentation in presenting that, gone through that totally. And it outlines and I think presents a very good example of how looking to that future, or what looking to that future could look like in a very serious way. Because here is an emerging, or it has already emerged, opportunity in terms of this crypto space, space and digital asset. Here it is presenting right before us. We have put our toes in the water. We have done some things. But lo and behold, we are now crafting something which is more expansive, something which is designed to be more strategic, something which creates a framework where we can understand the pros and the cons, some of the things which will prevent us from meeting those objectives, and start to carve up strategies in order to ensure that we get there, to make big, broad statements like leading the Caribbean, being one of the best in the world, having a jurisdiction which does differently than others, where you have greater balances between the pros and the cons, where we have the great big flyers and we have a means of carving out the bad guys. This is the type of a future Bahamas that I'm kind of thinking about. I want to engage you on. You have to call me. This is the type of thinking. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to do the Guardian AM show, and I talked about track and field. And track and field from the perspective of how are we going to challenge and question and get a little bit upset about the performance and do the things which are necessary to move forward in that space, not to win, but to get better. Ultimately, the objective is always to win, but to get better, always to get better. You're dealing with a big challenge. You're dealing with a gap. You're dealing with a situation where the circumstances going forward look dim, as the Prime Minister mentioned that the economic development of the country is in need of some injection, and this opportunity provides one. So there is, in a way, question being asked about the future. So what does the future Bahamas look like? What does the Bahamas look like from an ideal perspective, your ideal future, and how do we get there? Are the things that we are doing now, are the things which we are doing, when you sit down and you formulate this picture in your mind, if you have done so, and if you haven't, then you can take a couple of seconds and do so. When you look at this future state, and then you ask yourself the question, are the things which we are doing now sufficient to get us to that ideal Bahamas, that ideal new Bahamas? And it's going to be a new Bahamas every single day. The Bahamas today is certainly not the Bahamas of 50 years ago. So it's going to be a new paradigm, a new, whether you like it or not, whether you wish for it or not, whether you go out and deliberately do some things or not, a new environment is going to emerge. The challenge with not doing things deliberately is that the environment which emerged may not be an environment which is suitable, which is good, which is something that you like or you want to be in. So it definitely means that there has to be some dreaming, some thinking, some strategizing, some planning, some working, a lot of working, in order for us to get from where we are to that particular ideal. So my question to you is, now that you have had a chance to kind of knock it around your mind, are the things that we are doing today, are the things that we are doing in national security, are the things that we're doing in agriculture, are the things that we're doing in tourism, are the things that we're doing as it relates to our energy policy and developing the roads and dealing with the ports and putting in infrastructure, are the things that we're doing in education, are these things sufficient to get us on the path to reaching that ideal which is in your mind? Are we at the place where we have now carved out very clearly a picture which is going to create a new and better tomorrow? And we're doing the things, planting them bit by bit, and creating that momentum into the future. What say you? When you look across your mind, know that you have this very clear picture, and it don't need to be the picture in my head. It don't need to be the picture in anybody yet. It's just you thinking about a new and better Bahamas. It's better in the Bahamas, so it's always have to be getting better. I asked a question yesterday. Is this concept of being better in the Bahamas an inherent, static, naturally endowed reality? Or is it a circumstance where you inherit some things and you have to consistently work to make that statement true? Is it just always true regardless of what we do? So if we did absolutely nothing, no planning, no working, no strategizing, no improving, is it always going to be better in the Bahamas? I think it's an important question to kind of reflect on for a while. Because, you know, oftentimes when we say things and do things and come to believe them because we repeat them over and over and over, they sometimes can kind of take us down paths which are not really optimal for our own well-being, yeah? So it's better in the Bahamas. Well, better compared to what? compared to the next guy or the next country? Or is it better compared to where the Bahamas was? Because while it might be true in absolute terms, if we compare the Bahamas to country A, in every single instance, at every single time, maybe over a long number of years, that may be true. It's better in the Bahamas, but it may be a function of how bad the other place is. And measured against the first time the statement was uttered to now, it could be that it's not necessarily getting better. So, and I'm not saying that this is the case. What I'm saying is, are we reconciled to just see that as a static process or a static occurrence, something which just is, or is it something which needs to be curated and nurtured and built on and, you know, constantly fussing about it to the point where you ask the question, you say, it's better in the Bahamas, and then you stop and say, is it better in the Bahamas? Is it better in the Bahamas? Is it better in the Bahamas? And you're not asking these questions to be a critic. You're not asking them to criticize anybody. You're doing that from the perspective of where can we improve? How can we get better? How can we make the better better? Yeah? And it's that type of a thinking, I believe, which is going to create this new future Bahamas that we're asking about, but we don't know what the answers are because, obviously, I only have questions and you on the other side have the answers. So if you were to look at it maybe from a broad spectrum, you know, let's just take grab a few things. Let's look at it from an institutional point of view, say NIB or education or the healthcare system. So institutional wise, or we can look at it from an economics point of view, where we are with our fiscal thing, where we are with our debt, where we are with our foreign exchange earning, where we are as it relates to our PEG and the reserves and the state of the central bank and so on and so forth. So we can look at it from those perspectives. We can also look at it from the perspective of, you know, citizenship and how persons are afforded citizenship, the discussions around human rights and the equality of the sexes in terms of passing on citizenship, all of those things. We can look at it in terms of the institution of government, the institution of parliament, the institution in terms of its separation of the separation of power. So you have the legislature, you have the executive, and you have the judiciary, the effectiveness of those and how they are serving the country. So we can look at it from many, many perspectives. We can look at it from the perspective of how is it that we are progressing over a timeline, over a particular time continuum. In 1973, how we were. In 1983, 1993, and then 2023. Look at how is the progress. And in all things, you know, in all things, you are going to find progress. There's no question about it that the Bahamas is certainly much better than it was in 1973 in many ways. And you're going to find persons who are doing significantly well across the board. But in measuring this, we must not only look at it from a macro perspective, that is, take everybody together, but we also have to drill down. We have to look at communities. How vibrant was Baintown in 1973? How vibrant was Baintown in 1983? How vibrant is Kemp's Road in 2021? What are some of the things which are missing from these communities? Were some of these communities more self-contained in terms of internal economy, for example? The corner shops, persons involved in entrepreneurship. Where were we in terms of the quantum, the proportion of individuals within the country who fell close to or below the poverty line at any point in time? And so as we look at this idea of progress and think about the future Bahamas, we have to find all of these constituent parts. We have to kind of look at it like a jigsaw puzzle, because each of these represent a portion of the input which is going to create that brand new nice picture of the future. But in some instances, maybe in more instances than we would like, some of those pictures or pieces will have to be taken, they will have to be turned over, they will have to be assessed, they will have to be rehabilitated, they will have to be fixed, we have to recolor them before they will give you the opportunity to contribute to a beautiful new future Bahamas. Because left as is, there are many things which are not necessarily in a good state. So I'm asking you on the other side of the break as we take one to come dream with me and let's ask the question. Next year is going to be 50 years. 232-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. What in your mind does the future Bahamas look like? You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. Don't move. Come right back.
Around the world, Cleveland Clinic is recognized as a leader in healthcare. Our team of experts relentlessly pursues the best for our patients. From groundbreaking cancer research to state-of-the-art heart surgery, life-saving innovations happen here every day. When it's time to travel for your health, it's time to travel to Cleveland Clinic, your destination for care. For every care in the world. To learn more, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Wait, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, wait, just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I was a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know who you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
And welcome back, having a discussion around this idea of future Bahamas. How does the future Bahamas look like? And again, this was initiated, at least the thinking was initiated last week when we were in the throes of celebrating Guardian Radio 96.9 10th anniversary. of being on here. And so, you know, we still want to send out congratulations to all of the persons who have been involved in that from the beginning and those who continue to carry the baton and the flag in that regard. So I just wanted to really start to trouble our minds because, as I indicated, I don't have these answers. Usually the persons who are in a better place to do so sit different place, different from where I'm sitting right here in the studio. And they have other responsibilities and greater authority. But that doesn't preclude us from asking important questions, because I believe that we are all part and parcel of the collective intelligence of the country. And so even if we do not have the answers, we can play our part by posing the questions. And so that's what we're doing this evening. And I'm posing the questions to you, and I'm still looking forward to hear from one or two of you. So I will continue. So how do you see the Bahamas, for example? I touched on some of these before, but we'll go them again. How do you see the Bahamas in the area of education? In many instances, we talk about our educational system. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of us kind of default to this D-minus categorization. Whether that is as it is, and the fact, and I know it's a highly debated topic, some persons dispute it depending on, one of the things which I find really, really interesting about this discussion from political people, there is a discussion which happens, or you will hear them discuss a thing before politics. And then when they're in politics, it becomes different. It becomes totally different. When you listen to persons who have no connection at all to the education system, so they don't want to really understand, you know, you hear a whole different version. You talk to some teachers and you actually get an argument sometime which is rational sounding, but sometime I think go too far in defending some aspects of it. But again, it's all about perspective. So where do we see that? Can we get to the place where, though, this idea of even thinking about the Bahamas in terms of a D average just doesn't ever arise? Just totally gone. And the reason it's totally gone is because we have left the average, however it is measured, to a level where there is an unequivocal acceptance that it is well beyond and in the region where meritocracy lives. So how do we see education in that regard? Take, for example, this issue that we are grappling with coming out of the COVID crisis. Now, I'm not criticizing anyone. I don't like to say things which sometimes persons think, you know, you're poking at individuals. I've come to be aware that when you make broad statements, sometimes persons personalize them. And that's the only reason why I'm saying this before I say this. We came out of the COVID crisis and did school right across the board, public and private school, the exact same way that we went in. What do I mean by that? I have my son who was sitting before a screen for months after months after months, came out of school, there was no physical school. They went back into physical school like in a particular week, whatever the day was. But based on the calendar year, in normal times, 1 week or 1.5 weeks from that day would normally be a holiday. Yeah? Bear in mind, they absolutely just going back, you know. And the school went into holidays right there. All of the schools went into all of the holidays. I personally would think there would have been some adjustment. We would have reduced the holidays to a minimum. So we would take maybe like, for example, this holiday pass, so Good Friday, Easter Monday, and they will be back at school on Tuesday. Just because we are thinking about time loss, and we are thinking about how do we make good on certain things. And this is, I'm using this to make the point. Where will our education system be if we are not today radically rethinking how education is done? And to give that really, really good thought, to start to think about how delivery will look like, what the new environment will look like, how when we become the crypto capital of the Caribbean and maybe even the Americas, the type of educational system that we need and the type of training that is required to complement that policy direction. And that is outlined in the document, mind you, just want to be sure someone is out there saying, but that is there. Yes, that is captured in it. But again, like I said earlier, it is an example, a very, very good example, a reasonable example of how thinking and dreaming about a future Bahamas can start at this point in time. And I was going to leave this for later, but I would like to say this. That document, which was released yesterday, should become an example for multiple segments of government in terms of not ministries per se, but those in charge of sectors. As I read through it and I was thinking through some aspects of it this morning, and I say, wouldn't it be good? I mean, clearly it's kind of the thinking along the line of a national development plan or something similar. But wouldn't it be good, great, that at this point in time, very early in this administration, we see more of a broad policy position, very clearly delineated and put out there in the public to say, this is a potential future path that we are going to chase, that we are going to pursue. We want you to come because that's the reason we're putting it out there anyway. We want you to come as partners because guess what? There's nobody from Timbuktu or from Mars that's coming to save us. We have to save ourselves. And I'm sure you will agree there's nobody coming to save us, but you may not agree with who us represent. And oftentimes that us in many persons' mind represent the government, which is not so. It has to be broader. It's every single citizen and resident working together with other citizens and residents who happen to be individuals who hold position in the government machinery. So where are we going to be in education? We talk all the time about finances and economics, so we can jump over that. Let's talk about culture. What does the Bahamas do over the next 2 years, the next 5 years, the next 10 years, to do what I consider to be a greater integration of its culture? And by culture, I'm not simply limiting this to John Kunu. It's way bigger than that. Culture is, here is our working definition, how we do what we do. How we do what we do, how we cook rice. Peas and rice versus rice and peas, which is cooking in Jamaica and elsewhere. How we dance, how we sing, how we come together in social setting, how we do regatta, how we do and retell the historical past of the country. I believe that there is a huge opportunity. And, you know, we talk about this in broad terms about the orange economy and the blue economy, but yeah, the creative economy. But seriously, how do we integrate that in a greater way into the earning power, the economic power of the country? Because one of the things we sometimes often miss, when we look at a country like the United States is that we fail to understand. Just because it's a big juggernaut over there with great productive capacity, big farms, and putting out, you know, global type level output, we also miss the fact that the United States is always about selling its culture. And that's what many of us go to the States for. We go to Florida, we go to New York, we go to LA, we go to all of these places, and we are literally buying the culture, the cultural offerings of the United States. We go there and we have to get to Wall Street, to Broadway. Because for many of us, it's a feather in our cap. We have to come back and we say, oh, we saw cats and we saw dogs and we saw the play called Rabbits and the one called Lion. We have to see these things. But in a very serious way, it is the United States selling however it defines its culture, because a lot of these things are sometimes not original to the United States, but they take it and they reproduce it and repackage it, and they're selling it in such a big way as part and parcel not only of their local residents and citizens, but they're also selling this to tourists. Tourism is a huge, huge part of the United States economy. All of them people you see running up and down through Times Square taking pictures, a lot of them are tourists. So how can we re-envision the use of culture? And if you go through the Blueprint for Change, if you go through the initial discussion from the Prime Minister in the initial representation to Parliament, you will see this going through, I think, very liberally through it. Discussions about how do you take culture, make culture deeper embedded in the tourism offering. That has been said by the Prime Minister. But in a very serious way, we have said these things maybe over and repeatedly, over many administrations, but they have not yet, in my mind, materialized in such a way where you can tangibly say, you know, there have been a significant shift. In my time living here in the country, I have not seen that significant shift. What I've seen, what I've observed, and have developed a better appreciation for over time is the richness of the culture, which is oftentimes understated and underappreciated by many persons. And aspects of it which persons take for granted as not having value to be monetized because of the way we see it. You know, this is just something that we're doing. No. There are other persons out there who have a keen interest. So how do we capture maybe even some of the glory days? How do we get to the place where once again you have live performances in maybe not the same number of clubs, right? I've only ever experienced one, and I think that was, there was a club someplace out there near to the, I think it was Breezes. I think that was operated by King Eric. At early part when I just came to the Bahamas. And, you know, it was a wonderful experience. Live performance. People up on stage beating drums and singing and dancing and doing gymnastic type things. How do we capture some aspects of that, again, in strategic locations that we can use it to infect in a positive way the environment around those and create a greater expansion to the offerings of the country? So how do we do the culture? And how do we do Family Islands? How do we see the Family Islands and Grand Bahama in this new future Bahamas? Is it that we are still wanting to hold on to, you know, these idyllic locations? I'm not saying doing anything to destroy, because obviously, they're valuable in the state that they are. We need to be having development which is sustainable. But how do we rethink? Because oftentimes, person will say to you, the Bahamas is a small country. And if you could maybe slice that person's mind in a millisecond and kind of pull out the picture which caused them, well, the picture that they had in mind when they made a statement, out would pop the map of New Providence only. Believe me, as much as those persons are familiar with all of the fact that the Bahamas have 700 islands and key, oftentimes when we talk about it, we are really highly rooted in what gives, what happens, and what is here in New Providence. And for good reasons. Because so much of the commerce, so much of the growth and development is New Providence-centric. So therefore, the question I'm asking is, in thinking about a new future Bahamas, what role does the family island play in that? Do they remain as is? Or are there opportunities for creating greater growth and development? Are there opportunities for capturing nuances to the culture we just talked about? You and I know that, persons in the Bahamas speak slightly differently depending on which island they're from. You and I know that there are persons with greater leaning towards maybe, say, rake and scrape or a different style of rake and scrape depending on which island they're from. It may all sound alike, but it is different. How do we take those differences and turn them up, or even pretend to turn them up, for external consumption? Because a lot of time, it's really about how we tell the stories around the things that we're telling the stories about, which makes the difference, you know. So what role does culture play in this new, fantastic, more developed future, a future where the Bahamas finds itself sitting in the upper percentile of any national productivity or national economic performance measure, in any social measure, in any productivity measure? Where does the family island and the use of culture and bringing into play the differences in location, the differences in environment, maybe the differences in ability to grow different plants and different levels of agriculture, aquaculture, marine life. How do we do that? And I say, I don't have the answers. I'm just dreaming and asking crazy questions. We have a call on the line. Caller, go ahead.
Hubert Edwards, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Like to congratulate you on such a stimulating topic this evening. You know, we who were born in the 60s, and actually, born in the 60s, we appreciated aspects of before the 60s, 40s, and 50s, because our grandparents were around. They were able to sit down and tell stories and so on and so forth. You know, when we really look at the upper pelagic nature of this country, our islands back then were known for agriculture and fisheries. It is so sad that we have moved, or we are so far removed from what the Bahamas once was, that we have actually sacrificed the generations today because we have not followed some of the old concepts and precepts that have worked in the past and can still work today. Anyone can agree that a successful nation is a nation that can feed itself, that can sustain itself to a large extent. Not saying that in every aspect that they would be able to control or manage everything, but the basic necessities of a nation, we should be able to do that. If we would go back to the old landmark, we have all come up through the years being taught that, to be successful, you got to be a doctor, a lawyer, and so on, or a medical practitioner, or so on and so forth. But It goes back to the basics. Once we are able to get back into our agriculture and fisheries aspect, because that is what God has blessed this country with, then I believe that we can again begin to understand and accept that success of this country, the origins of it is back, going back to where we once were. And I just want to share that with our nation.
Yeah, before you move on, I want to ask you something. I want to just interrupt you there. Is it that we should be going back, or we should be reflecting on the past, knowing that we have done some things, but reorienting ourselves and reorienting those things for the future?
That is a double-edged question.
Yeah, it is. I want you to answer both of them.
Right, and I'm going to answer it simply like this. Like I said previously, the success of any country basically starts with the basics of that country being able to sustain its citizenry. Mm-hmm. And that is right back to being able to feed ourselves. Looking at that, we have been blessed with so many islands that we can grow a multiplicity of crops. We have been into the art of husbandry, and so on and so forth. It is possible for us to go back to some of the things that we used to do. However, to answer the future question, I think that you want to touch on, I believe that those aspects then lends to the future of this country as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just that we're going back just saying that, but these are the known things that we did back then and they work. But now with modern technology, with modern thinking and so on and so forth, and with our new generations that's coming up, they would be able to accept and appreciate the things of old, add on, and then add to that the new systems of the current generation, and add to that to develop something perhaps even newer than what they have ever imagined. And I believe our country can really move forward. And it is the mindset and it's the thinking like this that helps the country to move forward instead of being stagnated in the way that a lot of us believe that our country are. I just want to close on this one very important note too. You know, our first prime minister of this country was very instrumental in inspiring many of us to leave this country, go and get educated, and then come back to this country and learn what it is that we have learned from other persons, especially those that have the wherewithal to really move a lot of the systems, worldly systems along that we can adapt here to the Bahamas. Unfortunately, within the past 29 years, Hubie, in my humble estimation, our government, and in fact, let me rephrase that, because I always say that the people, the Bahamian people, is the government. But the 38 representatives in the House are supposed to represent we, the government. I believe that we are not utilizing our people in the manner that Sir Lyndon envisioned and his cabinet at that time envisioned to move this country forward. And that is what's killing and stagnating this country. We have lots of persons, and it's so sad that politics is the end all be all in this country that's destroying us as a people. When are we going to be united to talk about moving this country together in our motto, forward, upward, onward, together? When are we going to do that? Today, that is not happening. And it's sad because it hurts me if you were to face the reality that our country will forever be like this until we, the people, have a different mindset and we have a different change of heart to determine that this is not about party and personalities, but country. God and country comes first. Thanks, Hubie, for taking my call this evening.
Certainly great input. I know that some persons will say, and I would, we could challenge you and say, but the Bahamas does feed itself. Now, I know the point you're making is that the Bahamas feeds itself from indigenous sources. But of course, that we have to look at it differently than in the past. But I support the points you made, and I line myself to a number of the points that you made where we have to now start to figure out, in a bigger way. And, I do understand that not everyone sees things the way I do. Not everyone looks at things the way some of us will. Because, you know, for them, everything is okay. Things are right. Things are fine. But I believe that when we think about the future, and it is a reason why I mentioned earlier that we cannot only think about things on a macro level. Yes, we have to move the country in a macro way, but we also have to simultaneously keep thinking about who is moving along that growth continuum, or ask a different way, who are we leaving behind, or who hasn't moved, who have been left behind since the progress which has happened up to now being realized? Because at the end of the day, all of this talk about growth and development and planning and being better is not simply to say, well, collectively, we have now 10 marbles as a country. But it's to look around and say, well, there are 10 persons, and I mean, 10 marbles may be too small for this example, but let's say we have 100 marbles. And when you check it out, 95 of those marbles are owned by two persons. No, we want to be able to look around and make this determination. Not necessarily the amount of marbles that an individual holds. So let's say if 10 years ago, there were a couple of persons with no marbles at all. There were a couple of persons with two, and there was a couple of persons with three. And there were a couple of persons with a lot. The persons with a lot have a lot more, and we cool with that. The persons with one or two had one or two more, or maybe five, and we need to be cool with that because that represents progress. A couple of persons are going to lose some here and there, but they may be on even kilter, but that's fine. Some persons going to find themselves fall into the place where they have none, but that may be temporary. We can live with that. But we must be very, very, very concerned about those individuals who had no marbles at point one, no marbles at point two, no marbles at point three. These points are when we measure in it. And when we look at the future point four or five, the possibility of them having marbles is zero to none. Those are the persons we have to be very, very concerned about as we talk about growth and development. And it has to be very done in such a way which we deal with that. Thought we had a caller just now. The person went away. Okay. So let's take a break here. And when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. If you still want to join us, number 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, the text line 422-4796. You listen to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. This is The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Boy, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, boy, just a hard day, boy.
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking about everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Boy, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody say nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he send me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I was a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkanoo.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
Boy, ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. We're having this conversation. We're talking about the future Bahamas. We, you know, kind of moving around, talking about different aspects of the country, different aspects of national life. We're looking at Family Island. We're looking at Grand Bahama. We're looking at, you know, what role do they play in the near future, the next 20 years, the next 30 years, the next 50 years. Next year is going to be the 50th anniversary of attaining independence, of attaining self-determination. And the question is for us, as we look on, like any other country, Jamaica is going to be doing 60 this year. So, you know, a little bit ahead of the Bahamas by 10. And Trinidad and Tobago is 62, same time, well, not the same time, but the same month of August as Jamaica and many other countries around the world. As we, as you look forward to these younger countries, I would say, anything below, you know, I would say 70 years or so, having gotten an independence, you know, it's relatively young, but long enough for us to have gotten our feet under us and made, I think, a greater determination of the path forward. I believe so. I believe 50 years is a long time to do that. You know, if we equate that to personal life, many of us get to that milestone and hasn't done anything significant with our lives, so we can expect that some country may be in the same state. But as Candida Dames asks in the National Review, specifically speaking to the new administration and the government, the headline is, "What Lies Ahead?" She went on to talk about balancing campaign pledges against tough fiscal realities. But I'm for this discussion only interested in that top line, "What Lies Ahead?" So what lies ahead for the next 5 years? What lies ahead for the next 10 years? What lies ahead for the next 20, 30, 50 years for the Bahamas? And these are, I think, important questions, because every single day that those questions are not answered is a day lost. And every moment that we stop, contemplate, and answer them to some extent, even if it's not the perfect answer, you do create a foundation on which you can build and improve. And so maybe 3 months out, 2 years after, we're hitting on the right notes. We really have the answer to that at such a refined level that the future just suddenly changes. So where do you see the Bahamas? How do you see it? I have a couple of quotes from my book. I am going to read two right now. And one says, "I will paint what I see, not just what I'm looking at. I will paint what I see, not just what I am looking at." So oftentimes persons will believe that, and based on this is what the statement is trying to tease out, that what is in front of you in the physical is not the only things that you see. So picture this. You are an artist. You can draw or paint very well. You are like the new ambassador. You can look at someone and draw them. But in this instance, all you have is a blank canvas. Clean, white, blank canvas. And you have to dream up what it is that you're going to put on. Something which may have never, ever been seen. Just somebody looking and say, you know, where that come from? This is out of this world. We have never seen anything like that. But you conjure that up in your mind. So you are seeing with your inner eyes this image which you are painting. And that's what we're saying. What type of an image, what type of a future state which doesn't yet exist, but may not be totally, out of this world, because other countries have been down that road and it is in many ways additive to what we currently have. But it is an unseen state. What of the Bahamas do we see in that? The other one I want to share is, it says, "You will never be greater than your greatest dream. You will always be lesser than your greatest fear." live life without limits, dream big, be fearless. I believe in this whole dreaming scenario, planning for the future, thinking about a better, bigger, more vibrant tomorrow. First of all, you have to be very, very optimistic. And being optimistic when you are grounded and shackled and in the midst of the reality can be frightening. And so you need to cast off your limitations, cast off this thinking, you know, small country. Always going to be us. No. You have to start be thinking big countries. Start, you know, when Singapore started out, they thought big, and now they are one of the big guys on the block. The Bahamas can be there. The Bahamas has the ability to be there, just like other countries who are making the push forward for what I would consider to be, you know, the new dimension of existence when we get into this new world where the metaverse and virtual reality and cryptocurrency and digital currency is going to be the order of the day, where people who consider themselves to be nomads and they never really work at any one place, they don't do banking, they don't have no bank account, they want to buy assets without using cash. This is going to be the new exciting world where many of us will be on our rocking chairs and maybe have the pleasure of hearing a grandchild or a great-grandchild tell the story of what's happening out there in the world that we are not totally connected with. The place where things take on a brand new purpose, where televisions are not just televisions anymore, but they have a useful place on your wall because they are now frames for pictures. A whole brand new world. So if we are going to, as a country, and let's extend it because we're having a conversation, if as a region, for example, we are going to be different, we're going to be good, we're going to realize and optimize our potential, there have to be some big dreams. Because you can't get beyond that dream. Your big, 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 massive dream, and the ability to dream a greater one, you are always going to be progressing towards something big that you dream. So you will never be greater than that. But you will always be lesser than your greatest fear, because your fear is a limitation. The dream is an aspiration above, before, and beyond you. The fear creates a mark beyond which you can't pass. So you're always going to be below that. But you can never be greater than your greatest dream. And so when we sit and talk about the Bahamas and where it is going, and we ask these questions, we're asking it in that regard because we believe that as this moot statement went, which I am changing to say that be it resolved that the Bahamas has the wherewithal to facilitate a comfortable, dynamic existence for all its citizens and residents. I believe that. The Bahamas has the wherewithal to facilitate comfortably a dynamic, productive, and innovative existence for all its citizens and residents. Truth. We can argue about that if you don't believe me, but it is there. It is possible. So when we think about the things which we will have to change, like for example, Grand Bahama the hub of for digital technology? That has been said. Do we really, really want that to happen? And when we look around, do we see moves which may be inconsistent with that? Like, for example, if I was to ask a question, why would FTX not be in Grand Bahama? Some persons would say, well, why would they be there? That's not consistent with what they're doing. But it's a bigger question than, say, an FTX. And I'm not getting into people business. I'm just using them as an example. It's a bigger question than a corporate entity. It's a question towards a national strategy and whether or not we are moving and acting in a direction consistent with the very strategies or the very desire that we enunciate. And this is part and parcel of why contemplating what the future is at a big macro level and then slicing it down as to where does Eleuterio fall? Where does Andros fall in this? Where does Grand Bahama fall in this? Where does Inagua fall in this? Makes sense. Because it gives you a basis and a path for making decisions for the future. Very clear decision. It makes decisions become easier. Like, if I'm going to give up, for example, as an example, if I'm going to give up some concessions to a new entity who has the option of locating in Grand Bahama or New Providence, that concession isn't going to be the same based on the location. Because based on my strategic thrust, based on that future Bahamas that I've conjured up, I may want you to be in Grand Bahama, or I may want you to be in New Providence for strategic purposes. But that location may very well be ultimately your decision. But the extent to which I support your location is totally going to be mine. Because the value that I have, that which I put on the table to enable and to facilitate, has a larger outcome. We're working on a larger long-term outcome, which you happen to be a part of, but which is conducive to your own outcomes, your own desire. You see where your corporate objective fit into this larger strategy, and it makes sense for you. But for us, it don't make sense you being located on Bimini. We want you to be in Grand Bahama. But if you want to be in Bimini, then that's fine. You just won't get the concessions, as an example. This is kind of the point I'm making. As an example, the extent to which you incorporate local offerings in your product, let's say you're in tourism, the extent to which there are vibrant local shows with vibrant artisans and so on, may make the determination between the type of a concession that you can glean from the country or otherwise. Now, we are starting to think about things broader and in a more strategic way. If, for example, you want to come in and start some greenfield agriculture, then we can sit down and have that type of a discussion as to which island you're going to locate it, what type of equipment or infrastructure we need to put in to facilitate you, because this particular island has a role to play in a bigger national strategic plan, which suits you. We are going to cause it to benefit you, but ultimately there is going to be significant benefit accruing to the country in the long run and to the population, even if you want to look at it as the localized population around the areas which you are going to be located. So when we sit and we ask these questions about, you know, what does education look like? What finance and culture? What family islands look like? What does Grand Bahama look like? What do we do when we start to think about energy use and production? What do we do when we start to think about agriculture? How do we return, for example, to some of the quote-unquote glory days when there was citrus farming in the country? Is it possible to get back there? Not necessarily with those same type of crops, but in a similar way, when there was cattle farming, whatever it is that was there, it was done before, can you get back there? Is there a new vibrant sector that can be developed such that it starts to pump new amounts of foreign exchange revenue? Is there some sectors out there which we can use to unleash great value, that we can have production and we can have forward and horizontal integration taking place, for example, coming out of the marine industry. So we catch fish and we don't just sell fish, and we sell canned fish. What does the leisure sector look like going forward? What plans do we have for transportation in this nice, vibrant new Bahamas? What do we do with the arts, the dance, the music, the artisan? How do we do it? Are we going to just be limited to the craft market? Are we not going to redevelop and reopen the performing theater on Shirley Street or some other strategic location? Do we need to have more than one? What does that look like? How does the Bahamas unleash its natural resources, its historical past, its geographic proximity for a new reality? These are the questions that we're asking. We don't know the answer. You on the other side do. But I think if we bring our minds and hearts together, there can be some answers which start to emerge. How does the Bahamas look, or what does the Bahamas look like in terms of its leadership regionally in CARICOM, leveraging its geopolitical might or to the extent that it has that in with its relationship with the United States? What does the Bahamas look like as being one of the unequivocal? And, you know, you just can't argue with the fact that when it comes to the region, the Caribbean, to CARICOM, the Bahamas stands out in many regard as a leader. I'm not saying that that happens. No, I don't believe that the Bahamas is not a leader. I believe the Bahamas is not as much a leader within this space as it could have been or should have been. What is the role of each of us, you and I? What role do we have in unfolding this future? Is the Bahamas of 2022 the one that was dreamt up in the 1960s? It's an important question. Did we just get here, or was this dreamt up? Of course, there's always going to be some luck and some changes as we go. But is this what was dreamt up from then? Will the Bahamas of 2072 be the one that we are dreaming up right now? Or are we minded to just leave things to chance, leave things to a few persons, and leave these things to happenstance? And as they would say in the Bahamas, whatsoever buck up goes. Is it that is what's going to happen? Or are we going to plan and work deliberately for that new desired future? And then, by the way, from a personal perspective, what does your future look like for the next 10 to 20 years? Because that is important. Because at the end of the day, no matter how you slice it, the future of the Bahamas is going to be the sum total of the collective growth of all of the persons within the Bahamas. However they choose to be a part of the Bahamas, whether they are investors, entrepreneurs, citizens, residents passing through, it's going to be the collective total of those. So an important question that you must not miss is, how does your future look like in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years? We have a text here that comes in right on the top. Let's see if we can squeeze this in. Good show, Mr. Edwards. I, for one, and many choo-choo Bahamians and activists, knows the potential of the Bahamas, so much so, as you may often hear, we should be getting dividends. National income from natural resources like Singapore, Norway, and Qatar model, like Carla said, politics and politician mess it up, must change to make wealth more common. And I think we are clean out of time. We are going to leave it there. All that is left to say is, be good, walk good, take care of yourself. The COVID crisis is not over. So social distance and wear your mask. One love and Ubuntu.